Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The other thing was Carr was born with uncontrollable sexual urges that plagued him since adolescence, and he said it was so extreme that he decided to have his body altered to remove all of his sexual organs. People say, oh, well, he's just an oddball. We don't want to even consider him for a suspect, but I say, hey, you never can tell. When I said to John Ramsey, he said, that's just exactly who we should be looking for. I said, no one wants to look at him because he's just too strange and odd and weird, and he said that's exactly who we need to be looking for.
Welcome to episode 10 of The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects. I'm your host, Danielle Robay. Last time, we learned of one of the most disturbing suspects on lead detective Lou Smith's list, a child kidnapper and rapist called John Brewer Eustace III.
He said his life was drugs, alcohol, religion, and rape. He didn't care what age. He accepted his urges were put there by the Alpha God, and so they were all okay. And he was raping females, a serial rapist.
We're now going to remain in the controversial world of child beauty pageants to investigate two other names on Detective Lou Smith's list with ties to JonBenet's involvement in pageants. And, as with Eustace, some of the details concerning both suspects may prove upsetting to some listeners.
Who would have killed this little girl? We've talked in other episodes that somebody may have had a grudge against John Ramsey. That's a motive to take seriously. But it was a 6-year-old girl who had performed in beauty pageants, and it's possible, maybe even likely, that someone picked her out of a beauty pageant, or no beauty pageant, just a 6-year-old girl, and somebody might have spotted her and picked her out. Unfortunately, we all know that that kind of thing happens.
Well, she was sexually assaulted that night. We do know, because she did bleed into her panties, and that blood does contain the DNA of whoever did it to her. But how much of this was pedophilia, the actual cause and reason for this, or was it more that somebody was angry at John and wanted to destroy his life? We're not sure, but a big part of this case is that a lot of people watching the news, and the news media was pushing the sexual assault thing. I thought it was important that it, on posters online, so many of them ended up coming out and saying that they had been victims of incest. And so if she was abused, they'd rather think it was her father or a family member than think that it's a boogeyman who could come into their lives. So I found a lot of the people online instantly blamed John, saying that he was mishandling his daughter. But it brought out a lot of people who wanted to talk about sexual assaults on children, either their fantasies of it or their experience with it. I mean, all of a sudden that became a huge focus in the discussion.
In 2006, the idea that JonBenet's murder was committed by a predatory pedophile seemed to have been fully realized. On August 16th of that year, a man named John Mark Carr was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand, after claiming he was the killer. He said, quote, "I love JonBenet, and she died accidentally."
I love JonBenet. She died accidentally.
Are you an innocent man?
No.
Bon
what happened in the last year? Were you playing with her? What happened?
Her death was an accident.
So you were in the basement?
Yes.
Can you tell us about your connections with the Rambin family?
No comment.
How did you get into the basement to play with her?
No comment. No.
And how do you feel now? How are you being treated?
I'm being treated okay.
How long have you known JonBenet?
No comment on that.
JonBenet expert Lori Simpson believes there is credible evidence that Carr was responsible for the murder. She tells our investigator, Doug Longini, why.
John Mark Carr is a self-admitted pedophile attracted to little girls. He lived near the Ramseys in Atlanta. He was obsessed with JonBenet Ramsey. He said he was born with uncontrollable sexual urges. He was a married man with three children, and he was estranged from his own wife at the time of JonBenet's murder. They had apparently 7 months of abstinence, and he said that he left at Christmas time because she wasn't giving him any affection. And he just said, screw it, I'll go where I will get affection. I believe that he drove to Older in a black Jaguar, and the same car, make and model, was of interest to Ramsey investigators because the same car was seen going back and forth on Christmas Day. And I believe he was also at her talent show 3 days before the murder. There's a man in a video that's seen in the background of her talent show intently watching JonBenet. He's talking to another man down backstage, and as she comes on stage, he turns his attention towards her and walks away from the man pretty much in mid-sentence, and the guy turns around to see, well, what are you looking at? And then he sees that he's watching JonBenet. And this man was shown to his former wife, his former girlfriend. They all identified that man as being John Mark Carr. He also has admitted that it was him, to a confidant.
You sent me a text from him. What does he say in that text?
End of the text says, regardless of what you or even my attorneys have said, if I were to be identified at the Sunburst pageant, and especially at Southwest Plaza just before her death in the Boulder area, it would be really bad for me. That's what he said in the text. At the last talent show, 3 days before her death, there was a talent judge named Suzanne Rajabi, and she was also Miss Colorado of 1996. And she met a man that was intently watching JonBenet and assumed that was her father and said, oh, you must be so proud of your daughter. And he replied, yes, I am. Well, days later, when she sees the news footage, she realizes, hey, that wasn't her dad that I spoke to that claimed to be her dad.
I love solving puzzles. That's what true crime is to me, after all, just one big puzzle. When I want to take a break from the dark stuff, though, I like to lighten up my puzzle time with Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a puzzle game where every level feels like uncovering a new layer in a story, one you get to take part in. I love that the game is challenging while not being frustrating. The best part for me is when I have to choose the fiends I want on my team for each level. I have to make sure I'm playing the best fiends possible based on their skill sets, and since every level is different, it requires me to choose wisely for every challenge. The more I play, the more fun it gets. Plus, you don't need the internet to play, so anytime I want a little entertainment, Best Fiends is my go-to. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play online. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Carr told officials that he had drugged JonBenet and sexually assaulted her before accidentally killing her. And Lori Simpson says that Carr had prior form for this sort of assault.
He's the only suspect who's previously kidnapped a child back in 1983-84. 12-year-old child took her across state lines. She did go willingly, but he was 19 and she was 12 years old. He convinced her parents to let them marry. This was down in Alabama where the laws are a little bit more lenient, and they did allow that. But months later, she went running back home just afraid for her life. And she said that he had used a ligature device around her neck. He had used bondage on her. She believes he had drugged her and said she would wake up days later with bloodshot eyes and blisters on her privates. It was a horrible thing. She's still afraid of him to this day.
And you've talked to a lot of people who knew or know Jean-Marc Carr, right?
Right. I've talked to many relatives. I've talked to many classmates. I've talked to a lot of friends. Some of them had asked me to not reveal their identity, but I can tell you that there's an immediate family member who told me that they do believe that he could have been involved in this murder.
But on August 28th, 2006, all charges against Carr were dropped when his DNA was found not to match.
Yeah, Carr was allowed to do his own DNA swab with only one witness, and that was Detective Tom Bennett. And he threw the DNA swab into his hands and said, "Do your swab." And he just laughs about that whole situation. And he mentioned something about a magician's sleight of hand. And he is known to be an amateur magician. So I always wondered about that aspect of it. They didn't check his DNA against the Garrott DNA, because no one knew about it back then. According to Detective Kohler, there's a different profile on the Garrott, which surely is something that the killer touched. So anybody that's going to be checked against the profile should also be checked against the Garrott DNA.
In 2010, it was reported that Carr was living with a new identity, and even a new gender, in the Pacific Northwest. Our team leaders discuss how plausible a suspect he is.
Jean-Marc Carr is a name, my guess. Anybody listening to this podcast who has any familiarity with the case over the years is kind of going to put up those hands that you do, and you make the cross, like, you know, to keep Dracula away. It's like, oh my God, not him again. He seemed to be the suspect. He had spent years dangling over the case, sending letters to a professor in Colorado, speculating about the case, talking about himself, and not going into all of his bizarre behavior or claimed bizarre behavior. And the guy is bizarre. There's no way around it. Then he seemed to confess and was brought to the United States. And it turned out it wasn't the guy. They did the DNA with the DNA that Jameson has mentioned, and we've mentioned in this podcast series, that was found both in JonBenet's panties and on her long pajamas. So that's the main DNA, and his didn't match. So just like with every other suspect, when they don't match that DNA, they're, at least for now, cleared. And he was properly cleared. He remains.
He's not happy being cleared. And he talked to me over the phone several times. And he was, you know, follow me. I mean, you have to believe in me. You have to believe everything I say. I'm not gonna give you enough to put me in jail. But you have to put, I want to be in history as the killer of JonBenet Ramsey. And I called BS because I said, your confession does not line up with the physical evidence of what happened to her. He says he hung her up by her arms, and then he did this assault, and then this happened, and that happened. And there's absolutely no injuries on her arms and no reason to think that the cord was ever tight around her wrists, because it wasn't tight when it was found. And he would blow up at me and insist that I have to believe him. I mean, who the hell am I to argue with the killer who was there? He would very much blow back if you disagreed with anything that he said.
I think Jameson makes a very good point that his description of what happened doesn't fit with what generally is known about what has happened, and his DNA doesn't match.
And he won't give us another DNA. He says, no, he's not going to put himself in jail. So he wouldn't let us go up and take his DNA now. Absolutely not. He claims that he did some sleight of hand when he was giving the DNA in the plane or at the airport to the authorities. He claimed that he did some sleight of hand, and I guess he is claiming he gave them someone else's. But if you remember, when we took Rick Gardner's DNA, did I not hand him the swabs and let him do it himself? Where would he find identical swabs, pull them out of the air to do a sleight of hand and trick us? There's no way. I mean, this is his claim now, is that he did a sleight of hand, and I just don't believe it. And I said to him, you know, you don't have to prove to me that you were with JonBenet. You don't have to prove to me that you did. Prove you were in Colorado. Oh, I can't do that. Yeah. He can't do anything that is making him a good suspect.
Despite the holes in John Mark Carr's story, the team has new information concerning his DNA that once again make him a person of interest to our investigation.
A number of DNA tests were done in 2008 on evidence and materials from the JonBenet case. In 2009, there was a presentation to a cold case unit of the Boulder Police Department where, going into that testing, they had foreign DNA that was found in JonBenet's panties. And then in 2008, they found essentially the same foreign DNA on Long John's, on the waistband that JonBenet was wearing. So now you have, let's just call that person A for now. But while they were doing this touch DNA test, they also looked at the garrote. We don't know what part of it, because remember, it had a handle and it had a cord. So we don't know what part of the garrote was tested. And they also tested one of the cord on her wrist. And each one of those pieces of evidence came up with trace DNA from two other people. So one trace DNA on the cord on the wrists and one trace DNA on the garrote. So if we call that person B and person C, now we have DNA from person A, much more of that. But we have a bit of trace DNA from a person B and a person C on significant pieces of evidence. We don't know who that belongs to, and the police don't know who that belongs to. There's not enough to make a profile, but it raised some questions, and those can't possibly be answered yet because we don't know who person A and person B is. It could be an innocent explanation for each one of them, but we don't know that.
For the moment, then, Carr remains on our radar. In the meantime, Doug Longini has a lead on another of the names on Detective Lou Smith's list, a man who formerly held the title of President of World Pageant.
In looking through the tip sheets, I have tip sheets that went both to the Boulder Police Department and to the DA's office, and I have Lou's spreadsheet, and in all of them, I find the name Ted Cohen. And he came into the discussion because it was a detective down in Florida, Dade County, who sent in these tips saying that he thought Ted Cohen should be investigated. He was an older man. At the time of the murder, he would have been 74, which kind of sounds bad, but this detective had met him, and he obviously didn't think that he was so frail he couldn't have done this crime because he put his name in as a possible suspect. So he was in Dade County, Florida, and he owned World Pageants Incorporated and Gold Coast Modeling. Well, in 1992, he was charged with molesting two girls that were in pageants. They were aged 14 and 15. And he ended up getting...
You got 20 years probation.
I have a huge file on him, court records and his probation records and everything. And he would go and he would tell them that he had a job to go judge a pageant or to go fishing or to go on a cruise. And they just let him go wherever he wanted to go. So this man was a known pedophile. and he was allowed to travel. He had the money to travel.
I think he had his own airplane.
Yeah, he did at one time, his own airplane, his own boat. He was also a judge in dozens, hundreds of pageants. And that didn't all happen in Florida. He traveled all over to be a judge in these pageants. And my question is, was he ever a judge at any pageant where JonBenet was? Was he a judge 3 weeks before her murder in Colorado? And I have found that I tried to reach out to the pageant organizers and everything, and I'll tell you, they just closed up. They didn't want to talk anything about anything that could have linked her murder to the pageants. So I don't know where he was a judge. He made a couple of interesting comments to reporters after the JonBenet Ramsey murder. I don't know what magazine it was in, but the news story was by Karen DeWitt. In January 1997, he was still the owner of World Pageants Incorporated. He was still traveling to be a judge. And she noted that Cohen approves of pageants for adults, but is troubled by those for very young children. I thought that was an unusual thing for him to say, since we know he was a pedophile. He made a very interesting suspect. I mean, here's a pedophile interested doing pageants, traveling judge. We didn't know if he might have been in touch with JonBenet, so he was worth looking into.
He was quoted in a book in 1998, and he said, referring to the kids in the pageants, he said, quote, "They're an attractive package for someone looking to violate a young person." Yeah, Ted Cohen died in 2002, but that's not a reason to not look at him. There probably still is family DNA that could be compared. And, when he was arrested, he was 70 years old. That's when he got arrested for lewd behavior with young girls. So even though he is deceased now for many years, he's not cleared off of Lou Smith's list. And so he's still out there because a Miami-Dade cop thought he should be looked at. Ted Cohen is deceased, but using a database that we have access to and the public can have access to, I was able to find some family members, and I'm going to try to find out from them more about Ted Cohen.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Finally, Doug Longini's investigations pay off as he tracks down Ted Cohen's son, James.
Mr. Cullen, this is Doug Longini.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
You know, I didn't know that your father had passed away, and then I saw that he had, and then that's why I reached out to you, and maybe you can help, and maybe not, but I thought I would reach out. So
that's fine.
Jimmy's father, Ted Cohen, was a very highly placed figure in the child beauty pageant circuit. First as a judge, and then later as something of a national authority, thanks to an exhaustive directory of pageants he authored. He also made some controversial comments about pageants. Doug asked Jimmy Cohen about one such contentious quote of his father's.
So the quote was from your dad, they, meaning the beauty pageant contestants, they are an attractive package for someone looking to violate a young person. And what struck me was that because of your dad's involvement with the beauty pageant, do you think he had any insight? Did he ever talk to you about the JonBenet Ramsey case? Because it's so famous.
Yeah. No, he never spoke about that. I mean, my father was kind of a strange character when it came to things like beauty pageants. You know, he believed in them. You know, that became his life. I mean, my parents were divorced when I was very young because of his involvement with other women. So, but he never discussed the JonBenet Ramsey case or anything about it. I mean, I didn't even know he knew about it. He had to have. But he, you know, he didn't let me know about what his thoughts were or anything like that. I do know that he was involved in beauty pageants and would guide young girls to do what they needed to do as far as, you know, acting and modeling and things like that to make it in a beauty pageant. I wasn't too happy with his lifestyle, you know, and he knew it, you know, and so he didn't discuss those aspects of his lifestyle that I wasn't thrilled with. Mm-hmm. When he was involved in all this, I was already an adult, you know, so it wasn't something that he would try to hide because, you know, having two daughters and a son, me, I was more like his confidant when he wanted to talk about things. And, you know, I learned things about him that I wish I never knew. But when it came to talking about this pageant stuff, I really didn't care. And he knew it.
Ted Cohen was not only a respected figure in the pageant world, he also was highly placed in Florida politics.
And I saw in Wikipedia that he also had been a legislator?
Yes, he was, a Florida legislator. He was very hot in politics. He loved it. He was the Democratic chair in, I believe, Dade County. But politics and beauty pageants were his life. And that was it. I mean, for a while, he owned a plane, so he was interested in his airplane. Then he got rid of the plane, and he had a boat, so he was interested in the boat. But, you know, those were only little side channels.
And how long did he train women, young women, to be part of, like, pageants or car shows? Or did he have that company for a long time?
Well, he had a few companies. One of the companies was called Gold Coast something models or Gold Coast pageants or something. I really don't remember. It was because of his involvement with these types of organizations that my parents split up. And I was much younger then. I was 7, 8, 9 years old. You know what? It's history. And I learned a lot from it. I was able to direct my life in a way that was so far away from that, which was, you know, maybe a blessing. I didn't have to use my DNA to figure out what my life's going to be like. I had visual history experience. To me, it was a low-life life.
I remember him saying that in the publications where he was quoted, he would often talk about, like, he did like looking at these young girls, you know.
Oh, my God. He thought he was Hugh Hefner. You know, he modeled himself after Hugh Hefner, which totally disgusted me, my sisters. You know, it was just wrong. You know, his lifestyle was wrong. And it became his life. I mean, was he successful at it? I don't think so. You know, he ended up, you know, living on family money and not income. It was a sad existence, if you want to know the truth. It really was. I mean, when he spoke, it was all about either politics or beauty pageants. And nothing more, really.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't be sorry. Like I said, it was a great motivator for me to not be that type of person.
Yeah, I don't mean to make a, you know, like a big moral judgment here, but it would be like, I mean, maybe this isn't the right word, but a little creepy.
A little? It was a lot creepy. It was a lot creepy.
Doug Longini's interview with Jimmy Cohen was revealing about his father's character and perversions. But without further time and resources, it seems there's little more we can do to investigate Ted Cohen. The team discuss next steps.
With John Mark Carr, I don't see the path forward. With Ted Cohen, I can make an effort to put Ted Cohen's son in contact with Cindy Mara's group in Colorado and see if Jimmy Cohen or a family member, any family member, would turn over DNA to be analyzed, and Ted Cohen could be checked off the list.
Yeah, I think it might be worth asking Jimmy for his DNA, just because somewhere down the line, his family doesn't need this being discussed again and the name brought up. He might want us to be able to say, nope, we did the DNA work. He is off the list forever. One more thing I want to add, since we're talking about the pageants, is Randy Simons was totally cleared. It has not been brought out, and this would be a new name to the listeners, is that Randy Simons, early on in the investigation, went to the police and the district attorney and told them that he feels that somebody named Jeff Owings, O-W-I-N-G-S, needed to be investigated. He had a case pending in Arapahoe County around that time, and he is now in jail. And he had brought up the subject of JonBenet Ramsey over and over and over again to Randy Simons, saying how beautiful she was and begging for a photo of her. If Randy Simons thought that guy needed to be looked into, then I would expect the notes that I have to have said someone had interviewed him or been assigned him, and it's not there. So I was really interested in seeing Owings contacted and interviewed. However, being that he is in jail, he's protected. We can't just pop in and visit him, and he has to invite us, which he has not done. And I've gotten no qualms dropping his name. If somebody out there may know something, may have hesitated to share that information, and maybe hearing the name on this podcast will make them go, oh, well, maybe it's time to make the call, because we cannot reach him. I'm hoping that somehow we can advance this investigation, and if it takes dropping a name of someone in jail, I'm fine with that.
The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, is hosted by me, Danielle Robay. Executive produced by Dylan Howard and Matt Sprouse, and is a production of Broad and Water Studios and Endeavor Audio. Executive producers also include Tom Freestone, Doug Longini, Susan Bennett, James Robertson, and Andy Tillett. The series is written by Dominic Utten, reporting by Doug Montero. The series is mixed and engineered by Sean Kravitz and Sam Ada. There is so much more to this story, and you don't want to miss anything, I can assure you. Subscribe to The Killing of JonBenet, The Final Suspects, wherever you get podcasts. If you have information that could help our investigators and the Ramseys identify JonBenet's killer, please email us at tips@justiceforjonbenet.com.